Good morning. Okay, today I'm going to talk about the Youth Asset Survey and some of the information we have in there on virginity pledges and initiation of sexual intercourse. And this is the required APH slide. I have no financial relationships to disclose. Between 2005 and 2007, the U.S. birth rate for adolescents increased 5%. I think we just saw that in the previous presentation. And this was actually the first increase seen in 14 years. Motivated by this increase, a bill to fund comprehensive sex education was actually referred to the U.S. House of Representatives in early 2009. But not much has happened with that since then. And funding opportunities are coming along, and as these opportunities come along, it's important to know what actually works, and especially to help prioritize the limited funds we have available for teen pregnancy prevention. Recently, CDC sent out a funding opportunity announcement to test innovative, sustainable, community-wide initiatives for reducing adolescent pregnancy in communities with the highest rates. And knowing what actually works in these programs will help ensure the success of initiatives such as this one. So to get started, I'm going to tell you a little bit about virginity pledges. Virginity pledges are public or personal commitments to remain a virgin, generally until heterosexual marriage. The pledges may occur as a signed contract or through a public proclamation at a youth rally or at a church gathering. They're usually done in relation to a church. They can also be a personal commitment made to oneself. They are advocated by a lot of sex education programs, and many of the sex education programs, especially those that are abstinence-only based, promote these virginity pledges. Their prominence is also seen in the entertainment media. We hear a lot on the news about people like Justin Bieber and the Jonas Brothers taking virginity pledges. And there's a lot of talk out there, and it seems like everyone's doing it, but I'm doing a virginity pledge is what they're hoping. But what we find is that there's actually very little information out there that has looked at virginity pledges and that have actually looked at different pledge types and their use within comprehensive sex education programs. So with that background, we wanted to use the Youth Asset Survey, which has information on virginity pledges and has information on initiation of sexual intercourse, to prospectively examine associations between the pledges and a self-reported initiation of sexual intercourse. And I'm going to call that ISI. And ISI was assessed to determine if statistically significant differences existed among adolescents taking a virginity pledge at wave one or two, and then initiating sexual intercourse at some point during waves three through five. The Youth Asset Survey is a five-wave longitudinal study of adolescent parent pairs to investigate adolescent risk behaviors and youth assets. Census tracts in Oklahoma City during 2003 to 2004, the first wave of the study, were classified into five strata based on predominant racial and ethnic composition and socioeconomic status of the community. Random selection from the five strata and equal sampling from each stratum was targeted to achieve a sample that was both racially, ethnically, and socioeconomically diverse. One adolescent in the target baseline age range of 12 to 17 years at wave one and their parent living in randomly selected households were chosen to participate in face-to-face interviews conducted using a computer-assisted data entry system. The adolescent parent were interviewed at the same time, but in different rooms of the residence. The adolescent completed the risk behavior section of the questionnaire in private after the interviewer ensured they knew how to navigate the survey. Survey waves generally occurred each year, with the last wave of data collection beginning in 2008. Variables of interest included race, ethnicity, yearly household income, which was stratified into three categories centered on Oklahoma City's annual median income of $35,000. Parental education was stratified into three categories, Both parents had less than a high school education. One parent had at least a high school education, or one parent had a bachelor, at least one parent had a bachelor's degree or higher. Family structure was identified as living with one parent or two parents or guardians. And pledge status was assessed in wave two, and the type of pledge was indicated as either a personal pledge, that internal commitment, or a pledge that was a written oath or given at a public venue. And initiation of sexual intercourse was assessed, and only those who had not initiated sexual intercourse at waves one or waves two were included in the analysis. And for the analysis, we stratified the by youth age, 13 to 14 years, 15 to 16 years, and 17 to 19. We used logistic regression analysis and controlled for gender, race, parental education, parent income, and family structure. These are the respondent characteristics. Now, this is based on an N of 627, and that is how many youth reported that they had not had sex in waves one or wave two. The mean age of respondents at wave one was 13.7 years. 53% were female. 28% were Hispanic. 44% were non-Hispanic white. 18% non-Hispanic black. And 10% non-Hispanic other. Most parents, about half at 45%, reported their income as less than the Oklahoma City annual median of $35,000. And for over 50%, 52%, at least one parent had a high school education. And almost three-fourths of youth, at 73%, were from two-parent households. So as I mentioned, 627 youth reported they had not had sex at wave one or in wave two. And of those, 60% reported taking a virginity pledge. 55% reported initiation of sexual intercourse at some point in waves three, four, or five. 45% still had not had sex. 48% of those who did have sex had taken a virginity pledge. And that 48% is, it says pledgers, 181, 48%. For those who did not have sex, 70% had taken a virginity pledge, and that's the number on the bottom with the 197. We did a logistic regression, and because of an interaction of age group and pledge status, we stratified by age group using the age at wave two when respondents reported taking a pledge. We controlled for youth gender and race, parental education and income, and family structure. We saw that youth age 15 to 16 years who pledged were significantly more likely to report not having had sex during waves three to five versus youth aged 15 to 16 who did not pledge. This occurred whether we combined pledge types, like in the top line, any virginity pledge, or looked at them separately by taking a personal pledge or by doing a public or written pledge. Youth aged 13 to 14 and 17 to 19 years who had pledged at wave one or two demonstrated no significant difference in initiation of sexual intercourse compared with youth who did not pledge. So in conclusion, virginity pledges were associated with decreased reporting of initiation of sexual intercourse for youth aged 15 to 16, although not for the other age groups. And pledge type did not change this relationship. The results must be considered within the context of potential study limitations. For example, validity of participant responses can be questioned because youth might have provided socially acceptable answers. However, youth were left alone to enter their answers into a computer, and this should have lessened the likelihood that they gave socially acceptable responses. Additionally, we could not discriminate between consensual intercourse and rape or molestation, and this inhibits our ability to this inhibiting our ability to include only those who voluntarily engaged in sexual intercourse. Also, the actual pledges spoken or signed by each respondent likely differed by wording. However, all pledges that you can find online and with these systems tend to have the same message, that the pledger would not have sex until he or she was in a heterosexual marriage. This leads to another limitation in generalizability because this language leaves out lesbian and gay teens. Finally, religiosity was not assessed, and this has been associated with both pledging and delay of intercourse among youth. So what this leads us to for the discussion is why were the findings only significant for those aged 15 to 16 at baseline? And actually, this is something that I'd like to, when we get to the Q&A, get some help from you guys on different things that we can assess in this data set. Some of the things that we can think about are certain key life events occurring that are contributing or not contributing to initiation of sexual intercourse. For instance, you know, high school graduation, leaving the parental home, changing or dealing with sexual identity. Also, maybe those who were 13 to 14 at baseline, maybe they haven't had the opportunity to break or keep their pledge. They haven't been presented with the opportunity to have sex. And those 17 to 19 at baseline who had not had sex, maybe there's something about them, the risk behavior characteristics that are unique, that they already had certain avoidance behaviors in place. It's hard to know. So this is the kind of thing that we want to look into further, which leads to the recommendations that we do want to include other variables in the analyses that we have that are ongoing. We want to include religiosity. We've also thought about including neighborhood variables, things like broken windows, crime in the neighborhood, and how does that compare for initiating sexual intercourse or not, and use of the pledge. Pledges also currently don't address other sexual risk behaviors. So right now they're talking about we're not going to have sex, but should a pledge incorporate something like we're not going to have sex and we're not going to do other things that could lead to an STI, a sexually transmitted infection? So that's something to think about as these pledges are incorporated into so many sex education programs. We also are interested in comparing youth who did not take a pledge, nor did they report having sex. We want to compare those to the ones who did take a pledge and did not report having sex. What are the characteristics that these two groups have in common? And understanding the role of virginity pledges within this will help us figure out what's most important to include in these intervention programs and sex education programs. And I'd like to thank my terrific group of co-authors for this project. Thank you. Well, you had to have not have had sex in wave one or wave two to be included, and then we also said, did you take a virginity pledge? So you could or could not have taken a pledge, but you had to report that you had not had sex.
So it was anyone who hadn't had sex in wave one or wave two.
Right.
What I'm curious about is whether you could or will look at the data of people who had sex in wave one or wave two.
You know, we do have, I think some of the people may have looked at that. I'm looking at Cheryl because she's one of the co-authors. I think we do have some questions about that, and there actually are, in the very limited data that's out there on virginity pledges, there is some information that shows that people will have sex and then take a virginity pledge, and what does that mean? And then some people who, in longitudinal studies, and one wave of data will say, I've taken a virginity pledge, and then the next wave of data, I did not take a virginity pledge, and the next wave of data, I did take a virginity pledge. So we don't know if it's a retraction of your virginity pledge, if it was not that important to you and you forgot. So it would be interesting to look at that, and we Depending on how many in wave one or wave two have not had taken a virginity pledge or had sex, we might be able to look into that some, but I can't really comment a whole lot on that, but it is definitely an interesting component. Let's see. Stripes, I think I saw the plaid. Yes, that was, I didn't give you the question, but the question specifically said, gave a definition for what sexual intercourse was and included vaginal penetration. Let's see, right here.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brenda. The question I had, and I'm sorry if you presented it and I didn't see it, but is the comparison between the group who did take a pledge and didn't take a pledge? It seems to me that it's really critical to look at what factors are associated with taking a pledge in the first place and whether there are, these are two different types of kids or potentially from different types of families to begin with, that whether or not they would have taken a pledge is almost inconsequential, potentially, statistically, that they would have not initiated anyway because of other factors that are predictive of sexuality.
Mm-hmm. We did control for some of the key factors, like our first presenter talking about poverty. We did have race, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, family structure. We do have variables in this data set on religion, and we definitely are going to incorporate that into future analyses. We also have some information on youth assets, because that was why this project was done in the first place. And so I thought looking at some of the key variables, like what is your feeling of parental support and things like that. So those are some things we do want to look at. For this analysis, I have not yet done that. But the race, ethnicity, some of those are included. Yes. Definitely is critical to really say what's going on here, is to have further work done. Let's see. I think I've seen your hand for a while, so I'll go to you, and then I'll go to you.
Yeah. To follow up to what she was saying, did you assess attitudes about sexuality and sexual behavior? That's putting up a lot. I mean, I think what the pledge is supposed to do is sort of go on that social psychology. You know, you've made a public declaration, and that puts you over the top. But in addition to, you know, that you're more committed to behaving in a way that goes with your attitudes. But did you match people on those attitudes at all?
For this one, we did not look at attitudes. And I'm not sure how much we do have questions on attitudes. So that's actually a note I will make, and not something I had thought about was attitudes. And so thanks, Cheryl, for letting me know that's in there. Okay. I think I said you next.
Yeah, I'm just curious about some of the
I think that's something Cheryl and I were actually talking about earlier. We just have the type of pledge they've taken, and we have been curious. It seems like you could argue both sides. If you're at a youth rally and you're taking this thing, or you're at church and you're taking the virginity pledge, and this whole group of people sees you doing it, and you're all at the same high school or whatever, they're kind of going to know what you're doing. Maybe would you be more inclined then to keep that pledge? Because even if you didn't necessarily mean it, all these people saw you do it. But then there's also the personal pledge, where you just make this pledge to yourself. But since no one knows about it, are you more likely to break it because no one knows about it? Or because you've made it to yourself, are you more likely to keep it? We don't have that level of information in here, but I think that is a really important part of this, and something to consider for future studies when I think it would be good for people to really focus on one type of pledge, like the public pledge, and ask about reasons for doing that. Let's see, Christian back there. Oh, wait, over here, was there someone over here? Who's been waiting the longest? Go ahead, ask your question. Okay, beads, and then you. Beads, and then you. Yes. Is there a cohort effect?
Yeah, exactly.
And we have wondered, is it 15 to 16, you're just, that's when you're going to hit that time when you're going to be presented with that opportunity? But I don't necessarily think that's the case, since the 17 to 19-year-olds didn't show any kind of relationship. But I thought it was interesting that in the prior talk, the 15 to 17-year-old age group was the group that I think she said had the highest rates. So I think there is something going on with this group, but to say that that group had the highest rates, but in my group, the ones who took the virginity pledge were less likely to report initiating sexual intercourse. It does sound like there might be something going on, but what is it, and why is the 17 to 19 not showing that? Okay, she tells me I have one question, and so the person who I called on over here, yeah. And then afterwards, you can all ask me questions. Yes.
So, like, you know, like, they see a lot of things, but why didn't you ask other questions of other forms of sex about?
We do have information on what else you've done. We have about, like, heavy petting and oral sex, and we definitely are going to look into that. And again, looking at, I think, religiosity is going to be key in comparing those, but some of the other variables as well. But we do have that information available in this data set, and it's definitely, I think we've got about 5 different papers we can write on this with this really great data set. And I appreciate all the input that you guys are giving me. I've been writing things down up here. So, and I'll be here for the session. If there are more questions or you have some ideas for me, feel free to find me afterwards and let me know. Thank you.